Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 312. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's good. I feel like I'm learning to not sleep as much the last 10 days. Wild. But yeah, you don't operate on much sleep. I'm not operating on much sleep right now. It's just I'm not used to that. So I'm getting in spurts, but still, it's if I would just go to bed early, it'd probably be fine. But I'm staying up till midnight, and then it's like, nope, she's gonna be up in an hour to feed, and then a couple hours later to feed again. But other than the tiredness, we're good, can't complain.
Who needs sleep? It's overrated. Now my daughter's coming similar to me where she wants to stay up late, not get much sleep. I'm like, no, you still need it. You're 12. Like, she just turned 12 yesterday on Wednesday. Like, you still need sleep at this point. See, I'm not gonna let you sleep 4 hours a night like I do. I probably should get more sleep, but got too much stuff to do, too much writing, too much podcasting, too much just watching baseball and whatnot. And now I get the NBA finals to watch too. My Celtics kicking off game one a few minutes here. So that's a lot of fun for the next few weeks, but we got a pretty fun episode here today. I mean, promotions and demotions are happening a lot. We talked about a few of each last episode. We got four more promotions over the last handful of days, one notable demotion as well. And we'll talk about some surprise rookie standouts. I was looking at the kind of rookie WRC Plus leaderboard, rookie K-minus walk rate leaderboards, and just seeing some names that were near the top of the list that we didn't expect. It wasn't like Evan Carter and Langford and Churio and all them. It was some other names that have been taking the spotlight here for rookies this season. So we'll talk about them, if we believe in them or not. But before we do, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. This is at RotoClegg. I'm EricCross04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more from each of us, including all of our Dynasty and Prospect rankings. We're both going through updates right now, so check those out. And make sure to check out all the great stuff going on over at rotoballer.com. So much great content, tools, and more to help you win this fantasy season. I know we're over a third of the way through the season, but you can still get that premium package for any sport. Use the code TOOLSHED when you're checking out. Get you 10% off. Great deal there and some great content over at rotoballer.com. All right, Chris, let's get into it here, starting with some of the promotions over the last handful of days. We'll start in Baltimore with Connor Norby. I saw so many people saying, oh, this should have been Coby Mayo. Coby Mayo crashed to the dugout and he's out for the next several weeks, so Connor Norby gets the call here, and a decent season for AAA Norfolk, coming off a 21 homer, 10 steal year last year, hit 290. This year, pretty similar slash lines, 286, 374, 510, 9 home runs, 17 doubles as well, and 7 steals in 51 games, 238 play appearances, but also striking out over 30% of the time. Norby's kind of, he's been top 100 caliber prospect for a bit now, but doesn't get quite the same buzz around him that obviously Mayo and Cowser and then Holiday and others have gotten. So what are your thoughts here on Norby? He already had his first career home run, which is nice to see, and only his second game. What are your long-term thoughts here on Norby? Do you think he can be a guy that we can count on for some fantasy value here?
I just hope he plays enough. Like,
yeah,
I think our biggest question at this point is like, how much are these guys going to play? Because we've seen so many of the rookies come up, and now Holiday got his fair shake, but we've also seen Kerstad didn't. So far, Norby's played in 3 out of 4 games since he's got called, which is good. That is an encouraging sign to me that he looks to be taking over the second base position, which obviously Westberg's playing third. Westberg did play second the day that Norby sat, which means that Ramon Urias is losing the playing time, which frankly, it makes sense at this point, like that he wouldn't be playing every day. We don't have to go too much in detail there, but I think the Norby situation is a little bit different because there is opportunities in the infield, especially at second base. So that's his position. There's the opening there, just given the fact that Urias has been not great. And the fact that Westberg can play third when Norby's at second. So it just works out well for all of them. It's interesting. I kind of wonder if Connor Norby was just bored in AAA. It was his third season in AAA, by the way.
He was there for a bit.
Yeah. So he reached Norfolk back in 2022. And obviously not 3 full seasons, but when you're there 3 years, it probably gets pretty taxing. And I'm sure he himself was probably over it. And it showed. And the numbers obviously weren't great, especially when you look under the hood. The contact rate had fallen apart this year. It was 70%, 80.6% in the zone. So those are down from last year. The EVs were well below average. Chase percentage was up. So you look across the board and it's like, okay, what's going on, Connor Norby? And he started out the year so good too. So I think that it's probably just being aggressive, trying to play his way into Baltimore. And he did. 9 home runs and 7 stolen bases. And the slash was pretty respectable. 286, 374, 510. That'll play. It's fine. Like, I look at Norby, I think that he's going to provide, like, it's just knowing what to expect. Like, he already hit a home run, which is encouraging. I'm not expecting a ton of home runs for what it's worth. I think he could be over a full season, like a 18 home run bat.
Yeah.
He may steal 10 bases. And where does the average fall? I think that's the question. Like, what kind of contact is Norby going to make? We've seen him be a good contact here in the past, but I do think the OBP skills will play a little better. So if you're in an OBP league, then he probably plays up a bit there. So, you know, I think that Norby, as long as he's performing, should get a fair crack at playing pretty much every day. We will see how it plays out, but so far, so good. But yeah, I'm encouraged at least he's getting the shot and that he already hit the homer. Hopefully things are looking up for him after a long stretch in AAA.
I mean, yeah, he's already played more in his first in the first 4 days up than Kierstad did in the first, like, what, 3 weeks up or whatever it was earlier this year. I know he had a couple last year, but I'm talking about that stint earlier this year where he played like the first game and then it was like a pinch hit 5 days later and started 4 days after that. It was just ridiculous. But yeah, so it's good to see that he started 3 out of 4. So far, and you got the start today against a lefty, so that's nice to see. Starting against both righties and lefties right now so far. Gotta like that. So, yeah, I think Norby obviously doesn't have the upside. I mean, that's why he isn't talked about and have as much buzz as Holiday and Cowser and Mayo and all of them. But, yeah, I think you hit right on the head. Yeah, I have him 15, 20 home runs, maybe runs into double-digit steals and gives you a solid enough average. I don't think he's going to stand out in any one area. But I don't think he's a hurt you in any one area either. And I think maybe he gets to the point where he's a top 15-ish second baseman. Maybe a guy you're plugging that middle infield, utility, something like that. Probably not a starter at the position, but I think he provides him some sneaky good value, maybe like a Michael Massey type or something like that, where end of the year, you like the production, but it doesn't really stand out anywhere. But I like Norby. I think he's fine. He's got a solid all-around blend of skills, pretty good minor league career. As well, in 344 games, 283, 364, 495, 62 home runs, and 39 steals. So, pretty just give you a little bit of everything around the board. So, I think it's going to be a good amount, but I wouldn't go crazy to try to acquire him in Dynasty. The other one in Baltimore that just started today or on Thursday Cade Povich didn't have a great debut, allowed 6 runs, but this is a guy that had plenty of success earlier this year for AAA Norfolk, 3.18 ERA across 11 starts, 75 strikeouts in 56 and two-thirds innings. Also dropped the walk rate a few percentage points, which was really nice to see. And last year, it was up near 12%, dropped it down under 10% this year. WHIP was 1.11. I liken him to, at least my thought process with Povich is similar to what I was thinking about, like Kyle Harrison this time last year, where I think the strikeouts could be there. Now, Harrison hasn't been a huge K arm, but yeah, I feel like Povich will give you an above average strikeout rate, and he's always been that type of guy. But I wonder if the ratios are just a little bit higher. Maybe he's a high 3, low 4 ERA guy with a 1.25, 1.3 WHIP. He's still decent, still usable, but that's why I haven't gone like too crazy high with him in my rankings. I have him around, I think, an 87, 88 in my rankings right now. And I know others have him higher, but I still don't see him getting to that next level where he's like a major impact fantasy arm. But so I do like the arm, the strikeout stuff there. He's always proven that. Yeah, I don't know how much longer he'll be up there. I don't know if it's just going to be for a spot start or two or if he's going to be up long term. But I think it's definitely a lot to like here with Cade Povich.
Yeah, I really hope that they don't send him back down just on the fact of obviously the bad start today as we're recording this. He coughed up 6 earned runs, which obviously not ideal. Think that he's a better arm than this. He's made improvements throughout the year, which have been pretty encouraging to see, especially with the strike throw. I think that was the question mark is how many strikes would he throw? Him and McDermott both had had those question marks with command control, and they've both had some ups and downs with it. But Povich has a really good arsenal. It's a really solid curveball. I think the fastball will play. It's not a big fastball, low 90s. But I look at this profile thing, okay, like I think that he can make it work. And first start, nerves, things can go a lot of different ways. But I think that if he gets the chance to stick, then we should see better days ahead. I saw a lot of negativity on Twitter about him. That's what you want to do. That's fine. But this guy's much more than his first major league start, in my opinion. I think there's still plenty more in the tank with Povich. So I don't think he's like a must add, like in all league formats. But you know, I do think that he can be a solid addition to a team, especially in a deeper league, if he is available.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You know, when I wrote him up the other day, I said something like, I think he'll be like a top 75-ish arm. I think that's where he's at. I don't think he'll be top 30, top 40, anything like that. But just a solid SP 6-7 for your fantasy team that can give you some strikeouts for sure. The other pitching promotion here, Adam Mazur with the San Diego Padres. Had a pretty good year. Got roughed up a little bit in AAA, but it was the PCL, so that's not out of the ordinary. But looking at what he did in AA, he had a 1.95 ERA in 6 starts there before he got promoted to AAA, and 32 strikeouts to 5 walks. He's one where I see him get ranked really highly, and I have him like top 125. But reason I haven't been able to push him into my top 100, you know, or even as high as a lot of other people have him, is I just don't know how much impact he gives you in the strikeout department. This year, his K rate was right around 25%, but it did dip a good amount in AAA, but it was only 4 starts. I just don't know if he's going to be more than a league average strikeout arm. So given the limited upside that I believe he has there, that's why I haven't gone too high with him in my rankings. But had a solid first outing, 1 earned run, 6 innings, 2 hits. But 4 walks, 2 strikeouts. A little bit of bad there as well. But where are you at on him, Chris? And you know, what type of arm do you think that Mazur will be long-term?
Yeah, he's interesting. He's a strike thrower. I think that's probably the most important thing to note is that he does throw a lot of strikes.
Yeah,
it's interesting profile. It was a below average like CSW rate in AA when he was dominating pretty heavily. And so I look at that and say, okay, like, why do I want to buy into this when he was not showing great swing and miss stuff, especially at AA? When it's AAA and stuff fell apart a bit, it's a decent fastball. He's sitting 95, he's touching 98. It's an interesting movement profile. He does throw a lot of strikes with that pitch and he locates it well, which is good. But again, it doesn't miss bats at all. Really, like, the best bat missing pitch in his arsenal, probably his curve. And he doesn't throw a lot of four seam slider, even throw in a cutter some. So that's interesting to look at and see, okay, who is Adam Mazur going to be? And I still think he's young, obviously. He's still got plenty of time to develop. But right now, like, my concerns there with you is there's been a lot of hype around him. I've seen him like top five pitching prospects on some sites. I'm not there just because I don't think he's going to miss enough bats. I don't think the arsenal is quite there for him to miss those bats when I look at the whole profile. And so at the end of the day, I don't know. I'm like, I've got him top 100, but he's not that exciting to me. Yes, he's up, so he can help you right now, which is a good thing. I think that he obviously can contribute at a young age on a good team. That helps. But the stuff is just like okay, in my opinion. I think he's 5 to 55s across the board, so like average to above average stuff with plus or better command and control, good strike throwing. And that may allow him to play up the fact that he can locate those pitches well, but he's going to have to show better stuff to miss bats. And I don't really see it yet. Not to say it can't develop, but in the immediate, like, I'm not like going out and rushing to get him everywhere.
Who do you think is the more valuable arm 5 years from now between Povich and Mazur? Who do you think it is?
Probably Mazur, just because of the command. Like, I think he's just going to limit walks. And I think Povich could run into that trouble where he could end up in the pen, where I do think that we are looking at a starter profile with Mazur just because he throws so many strikes.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Mazur has the higher floor, but I think Povich has more upside. Who do I trust more, Baltimore or San Diego? Probably Baltimore, but I think it's going to be close either way. I think they're both being that top 75 caliber pitcher range. I guess I'll lean Povich, but not neither one. I like both these guys, but I just think there's people that like them more than I do, just looking at rankings out there. But both solid arms for sure. The other hitter here that got called up recently, Blake Dunn with the Cincinnati Reds. I mean, this season has not gone according to plans for Cincinnati. We went into spring training a few months back. Where are all these good young bats going to play? They don't have room for them all. And then, boom, injury, suspension, injury. Benson forgot how to hit a baseball. It's just not gone right for Cincinnati this year, outside of obviously Ellie when Ellie's been hot. But now Blake Dunn's getting the chance. Jacob Herdebe's got a chance. And even Nick Martini was getting some run and has still getting some run. And who knew who the heck Nick Martini was entering the season? Not many people. So that just shows you how the year for Cincinnati. But yeah, Blake Dunn getting the shot now. 25 years old. He'll be 26 end of the season in early September. So a bit of an older prospect, which is for the most part kept his perceived value in check, his rankings in check as well. Seen a pretty wide range on rankings for Dunn. 2023, 23 home runs, 54 steals, hit .312 between high A, double A. This year, production fell off a good amount. Four home runs, 9 steals, and 44 games is still decent, but only a .223, .348, .378 slash lines. Pretty just tough one to figure out right now. Obviously, you like the ballpark context. Obviously, there's not like a ton of raw power here. I don't know. Chris, where are you interested at all in Blake Dunn?
He's interesting. I'm not like way in, obviously, as my ranking says. Like, we post from the Toolshed account, I'm much lower on Dunn. I think that there is some intrigue. Interesting thing is his bat speed's like stellar. I know it's just three plate appearances, so who cares? But like, that was weird to see, like, his bat speed, like, it literally at the top of the list. So he just like amped up and trying to swing as hard as he can. I don't know. I think that Dunn's kind of one of those profiles where he's like a sum of the parts and you hope that all works out. And last year may have been the pinnacle. He was really good between high A and double A, 23 homers, 54 stolen bases, which was really encouraging. Then he hit .312 with a .425 OBP, which was awesome as well. That man was hit 32 times by pitches last year. What was he doing to pitchers? That seems like a lot, but I don't know. Maybe I'm way off on that, but that seems like a lot of hit by pitches. Just looking at that on the stat sheet. Yeah, this year he was banged up a little bit, but the results weren't there. The power wasn't really there. Not stealing as much. He just stole 9 bases, but striking out a little more. So at the end of the day, like, I think Dunn's fine, but I also think he's a weak side platoon bat, which that in itself is not an ideal situation to be in. But I think he's really only going to play mostly against left-handed pitching, which makes him really hard to roster for fantasy purposes.
Yeah. Over a full year, if he was to get regular playing time and 600 plus plate appearances, I could see him with half those games being at Great American Ballpark. I could see him running into the 13, 14, 15 home runs, maybe 20 plus steals, something like that. But yeah, is he going to get that much playing time when everybody gets healthy at some point? Does Dunn have a spot? I think that's still a question mark. These guys are going to get healthy at some point here. You'll be getting some guys back from Marte back from suspension as well. So this lineup's going to start filling up again over the next few months. So we'll see. We'll see where Dunn, where he plays, if he plays. He's back down Triple A. Still remains to be seen. But you're looking at – last year was the outlier for his power, too, at least for his home run production. He had 15 home runs in 77 games for Double A Chattanooga last year in the Southern League. I mean, that's his previous career high at any level was 5 at Western Michigan back in 2019 in college. So – yeah, sticks out like a sore thumb, but I think there's some intrigue in deeper formats right now, but I won't go after him in like 10 or 12 team leagues right now. The motion we had over the past week, and we've had a few notable ones over the last few weeks, but another one in the AL Central with Edward Julian going down to AAA. You look at Julian's career overall, and all right, in 602 plate appearances, he has 23 home runs, 9 steals, and 358 OBP. That's great and all, but this year, 207, 309, 367 slash line. Did have 7 home runs and 6 steals, but 34% strikeout rate. Just not going to get it done. He wasn't really playing much at all against lefties. So he was in a platoon when he was playing. Still hitting fastballs very well. 299 batting average on fastballs. 557 slug, all 7 of his home runs. But under 100 batting average against both breaking and off-speed pitches, and had a 52.5% whiff rate on off-speed, 39.3 on breaking. Last year, they were both in the low to mid 40s. So lots of red flags in the profile as well, Chris. Is there any hope for Julian? I'm not getting the same vibes from Evan Carter, but we've seen some more things from Carter. Is he going to be able to pit lefties in his career? Is Julian too passive? That's the question we've had for a while here, and he has a swing rate about 10% lower than league average right now. I mean, would you be looking to buy low, Chris, or are you got a couple feet out the door at this point?
Yeah, I think that's interesting because like early in the year, he was looking really good. And then, like I said, it all came crashing down and the results have been very bad. Yeah, the OBP is very high. He walks a lot, but it doesn't really matter all that much when you're striking out as much as he is. And he's got a book out on that. He can't hit breaking balls, which is tough. So I think you got to figure that out. Can he figure it out? Like, we'll see. I think that he probably needs to answer that question because it had gotten pretty ugly before the demotion. And he probably needs just a full reset in the minors. He had 200 slug in the month of May with 0 home runs. And he had 187, struck out 37% of the time. So that's concerning to me. I wonder if it was a kind of a mental thing, got in a slump, and just ultimately, like Spencer Torkelson, couldn't get out of it. Reset in the minors, maybe something that he needs. We'll see if he can actually get back on track. I hope he can because it's a fun profile if he can hit. I mean, he's got power, but he's even got some speed. He's shown he can steal bases. But when you can't make contact, doesn't really matter. And I don't know. I'm scared the passivity is just going to hurt him because he's never going to get in good counts to hit. And if he just gets screwed and he's getting these breaking balls with 2 strikes and he's striking out. So I'm not overly interested actually in him right now, which stinks because I do like the profile, but I'm out.
I'm still holding on a little bit of hope because you look at the contact rates and yeah, they're not great, but they're not terrible either. He's about 3.5% below league average in zone, about 6% below league average in overall. So again, they're bad. I'm still holding out hope that he can at least maybe not get to the level where he was earlier this year, but there's still like a 25 homer, even if he's strong, mostly a strong side platoon. Yeah, that still gives you what, usually 500, 550 play appearances, something like that. I think he can still run into 25 home runs there, maybe add 5 to 10 steals. And obviously OBP formats, he adds a lot more value there. But when you have these contact skills along with the passivity that he does have, that's not a great combination, as we've seen that limit so many players over the years. And the fact that he just cannot hit anything that's not a fastball right now is very concerning. And he had some of these issues last year, not nearly to the same level, but definitely has always had issues with non-fastballs. See, that's definitely concerning. It would depend on price. If the price has dropped low enough to the point where, maybe if I give like a back-end top 100 prospect, all right, I can do that. But yeah, I'm not super encouraged. I'm not like screaming, oh, buy low either. So I guess it just really depends on the price with Julian. But who would you rather buy low on? If I told you you have to buy low on one of these two guys, would you rather buy low on Torque or Julian?
Probably Torque, if I'm being honest. I think that would be where I'd go. And I'm not confident. I'm not confident in Torque at all, if that says anything. So
yeah. I think I would lean Torque as well. Yeah, I'm there with you, though. I'm not overly confident in either. I still think there is some hope for both. But yeah, I guess it would just, again, all come down to the price. But let's go over to some rookie standouts that are actually doing right now. We got a trio of hitters and four pitchers. We'll start with the hitters. Now, these are actually the top three. If you go over to FanGraphs, to the leaderboard page, filter it by rookies with at least 100 plate appearances this season, these are the top three in both WRC Plus and WOBA. You got Joey Ortiz, Mason Winn, and Willier Abreu. I mean, Joey Ortiz has quietly just been really freaking good this year. I don't know if people missed my tweet from, I want to say it would have been on Wednesday. I was playing around with the Savant percentile rankings, and they have a whole page for it, and then you can download it to a CSV. So I was kind of doing some filtering and looked at bat speed, sprint speed, walk rate, strikeout rate. And I was looking at, I filtered it to 80th percentile or better in all four of those. Only one guy fit all four, and it was Joey Ortiz. Never would have thought that, but you know, he hasn't had massive, like, you look at the overall line, it doesn't stand out at you, but he is slashing 288, 389, 487, nearly as many walks as strikeouts. You got 13.4% walk rate, 14.5% strikeout rate, 5 home runs, 3 steals, 24 runs, 21 RBIs. Again, it's nothing massive. Chris, I feel like Ortiz is just getting better and has, you know, a lot of good in his profile. He's got decent enough quality of contact metrics. Not going to wow you, but they're around league average. So maybe this is a guy that can run into 15, 16, 17 home runs, maybe a 7-8 steals with a, you know, decent average in OBP. Again, not a guy you're going to rely on as a starter at second or third or anything like that, but you know, maybe a decent middle infielder or just a solid back end of your roster guy. I think what he's doing is legit for sure.
Yeah, I think that he's so good. Like, I think that Joey could potentially win Rookie of the Year at this rate. Like, he's been that good. And early in the year, everybody's, oh, he's not playing regularly. This guy's not good. The trade was stupid, blah, 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 blah. I think he's out proving people wrong. He's doing exactly what he did his entire minor league career in Baltimore. He was really good. Yeah, you'd like to see a few more home runs, but still, he's got 5 home runs. He's got 3 stolen bases. I mean, 288 with a 389 OBP. He's making contact at a 93% clip in zone and 86% overall. He's not chasing anything out of the zone. This is just a hitter, and he keeps hitting. He keeps performing, and he's worked his way into everyday playing time now. It's going to be hard to keep this guy out of the lineup. If he can lift the ball a little more and hit it in the sweet spot, ideal launch angles, man, he could really take off. Like, the barrel rate's pretty subpar right now, but everything else is really good. I think Ortiz just might be a guy that he's worthy of being invested in. And I'm looking at my dynasty ranks and trying to figure out, like, okay, where do I slot this guy? Like, feels like he's a top 200 guy for dynasty at this point. Yep. Is it too premature? I don't know. I don't want to be too premature on that and then miss out like him just going too high on him. But at the end of the day, I think what he's doing is legit because all the data kind of is supported by what he did throughout the minors. So I'm pretty in on this profile.
Yeah, it's not like he's been like any major gains lately. Like you said, he's been doing this. He's just been solid across the board, and especially in terms of contact and approach, both phenomenal there. Yeah, I think he's legit. And I was guilty of not ranking him high enough as a prospect. But I don't think top 200 right now. I want to go like top 125, top 150, but right. I think if you put him like the 175 to 200 range, I think that's absolutely fair right now. So I think I'm probably going to put him in that range. I got to figure out where I want him right now and for my next update upcoming here. But yeah, there's a lot of legitimacy here. There's a lot of good metrics across the board. And I think he could be a guy that maybe, I don't think he'll ever get to top 100 value, but maybe he gets to top 150 value and just kind of settles in there as a solid player. That's, I think when I wrote up about Ortiz the other day, I said he's not a league winner, but people that win fantasy leagues have guys like Joey Ortiz on their roster.
Right.
You got to have those types. Yeah, it's fun to get the flashy types and hit on the massive breakout, but you got to get those steady guys as well if you want to win your leagues. I mean, whether that's redraft or dynasty, this applies to both of them. So people that win leagues have guys like Joey Ortiz on their team. So definitely what he's doing out there in Milwaukee. We'll keep it out there in the National League Central. Go down to Mason Wynn, who currently leads all rookies with a 309 average. Who would have thought that Mason Wynn would lead this very loaded rookie class with guys like Langford and Holiday and Churio and Evan Carter? Nope. Mason Wynn leads an average with 309. Kind of interesting profile. Obviously, Wynn's got good speed. We knew that. He's at 8 steals already, 89th percentile sprint speed. He's got good contact skills as well. Not quite on Joey Ortiz levels, but he's 86.5% in zone, 83.5% overall. You know, doesn't have great quality of contact, though. I think he's ever going to. He's pretty near the bottom of the league in a lot of quality of contact metrics. I mean, he's only got two barrels the entire year with 148 balls put in play. So I don't think you're going to ever get more than 6, 7, 8 home runs a year out of him. Maybe he runs into 10, 11 one year. But if he can give you a decent average, 20-plus steals, I mean, again, not flashy, but that has some value there, and he's got to keep playing. I mean, he's got like a kin for an arm at shortstop. He's going to keep playing for that St. Louis team at shortstop. So I'm not like super high on him. I won't have him as high as Ortiz. Maybe he's more like a top 250 guy, but there is some value here.
Yeah, no, I think so too. I think that it's an interesting debate between – Ortiz and Wynn. Like I was thinking about rankings, like where do these guys fit? And you know, Wynn's been quietly really good. And obviously the under the hood stuff has been a little subpar. You look and he's got a second percentile barrel rate of 1.4%, two barrels all year. Obviously he doesn't hit the ball hard, which does factor in. But we are talking about a 22-year-old kid who's doing a lot of things well. He provides exceptional value with his glove, which again, that's why I don't like the fielding run value on Savant or like the outs above average. He's like bottom tier with his glove. Yeah. It's weird. Like Wynn's got a really good glove and arm. So yeah, I think that obviously those things probably improve. The bat though, the contact skills have looked good. He's seen the ball at ideal launch angles. So if he can just get a little bit of power, a little more juice behind the ball, swing the bat just a hair harder, then maybe he can turn into something. But what does he profile? Like, by the end of the year, is he a 10 home run, 30 stolen base guy? Like, is that what he is? Or is he going to be 15, 25? I don't know if he gets 15 home runs, honestly, but would you be disappointed if he went 10, 30 and he ends up hitting 275? Is that a disappointing season for Wynn? I don't think so.
I think that's a good season for Wynn. That would exceed my overall expectations for him. Not by a ton. I thought he'd be a decent player, but yeah, if he can get around 10 home runs and 25 plus steals, which definitely in play, he's on pace for like 8-22 or something like that right now with a good average. Yeah, again, not a stud, doesn't stand out, but definitely can provide some value and fill in at middle infield for you if you have some injuries or something like that. But yeah, I think there's some low end value there for sure. I would still go Ortiz over him,
yeah,
but it's not by a huge gap. Like I said, Ortiz probably be like top 200 guy for me, win probably more like 225, 250, but yeah, both kind of sneaky good guys this year that aren't getting as much love as they probably should. Same with this guy too, even though he just landed on the IL, unfortunately, after falling down the or slipping down the dugout stairs and spraining his ankle. Willie Abreu is having a pretty good year in 189 plate appearances, 6 home runs, 7 steals, 272, 344, 485 slash line, and a lot of good under the hood as well. K rate, you live with that. Your walk rate, 10%, is pretty solid as well. A little bit of a higher whiff rate overall, but a good quality of contact, 12.5% barrel, 48% hard hit rate. Was running a bit too. Not a burner, but a guy that had 7 steals already. And higher up on the bat speed leaderboard as well. So pretty good metrics under the hood too. And a guy that was, I was like, man, I was sitting there like a week ago or so watching the Sox. And I was like, is Willie Abreu going to go like 2020 this year out of nowhere? And he was on pace to do so. And the playing time was there due to all the other injuries we've had in Boston. But unfortunately, now he's going to be out for a bit and seeing an ankle specialist. But assuming that he's back at some point and then this isn't like a long-term issue with the ankle, were you buying into what you were seeing from Abreu so far this year, Chris?
Yeah, he was a pleasant surprise. And obviously, like, last year we saw what he was capable of. So it wasn't like he came out of nowhere. But to say that you expect him to come up and put up these kind of numbers so far this year, 6 home runs, 7 steals, respectable OBP and average, really good barrel rate, really good hard hit rate, like looking at 84th percentile or better on bat speed, barrel rate, and hard hit, which is good. And yeah, there's some whiff in the game, but at the end of the day, like, he's made it work. His own contact's still respectable at 78%, below average, but it's worked. And I think it's a fun profile. Hopefully he can come back pretty healthy. It's a crazy injury. At the end of the day, I still like Abreu. I think that he's lifts the ball enough and pulls the ball enough, which allows him to get to those home runs, especially when he's hitting the ball hard. He doesn't hit a lot of line drives, which isn't conducive to batting average. But I will say the scary thing is hitting 154 against breaking balls with a 34% whiff rate. Does that book come out when he comes back and they start throwing more breaking balls? Probably too soon to say, but I still really do think this profile could be pretty solid one. And he was seemed like he may have been up there for the rookie of the year running, like with how things were going so far, which was crazy.
Yeah, now who's the win rookie of the year American League? Is it going to be Colton Cowser? He's still up there. We've talked about him enough. We're talking about him again today. But yeah, the AL Rookie of the Year race, we were thinking it was going to be like this race between Langford and Jackson Holliday, maybe Mayo if he got there early enough, Evan Carter, maybe a little Colt Keith action up in there. But nope, nothing of the sort. Right now it's Abreu, who's hurt, Colton Cowser, and Cooper Criswell. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Oh, no, wait a minute. Dirt. Luis Gil. Okay.
Oh, yeah. He's been so stinking good.
I keep forgetting that Luis Gil is still a rookie eligible. This doesn't click in my mind. He's been around for a bit longer than most of these guys. But, yeah, outside of Gil, it's been a pretty disappointing rookie year in the American League. But going over to the pitchers now, we got a pair of pitchers here with the Chicago Cubs. And we'll start with a guy that's becoming one of my favorite guys in all of baseball to watch pitch. That's Shota Imanaga. All of the hype was on Yamamoto, and rightfully so. I don't think that was unwarranted, but Imanaga definitely got undervalued, and I'm guilty of that as well. 30 years old, that plays into it. He's about, I think, 4 years older or 5 years older than Yamamoto, something like that. But through his first 11 starts, 1.88 ERA and a 1.04 whip, 21.9 K minus walk rate, 4% walk rate overall. He has sputtered a little bit here over his last couple of outings. But he was on like a 6 or 7 start streak of just not allowing any runs whatsoever. He's a guy that doesn't blow you away. He's 92 on the four seam with a really good splitter, and he mixes in occasional sweeper curveball, but those are only about 9% of the time. But the command is so good. He goes four seamer up, splitter down, and you look at the heat zones on those, and it's a very good command on those two pitches. So it's been working for him. But are you buying him on this level, Chris? Because I saw so many people on Twitter saying, oh yeah, he's a top 10 dynasty pitcher like already. And I love the guy. Really do. But I'm not ready to go that high on him. I could see, all right, top 25 dynasty arm. Sure. 100% there. But how high would you go on him, in terms of in dynasty pitcher rankings? And are you like fully believing and what you're seeing, or are you feeling regression here?
Let me see where I have him right now. Definitely not top 10. I think putting him top 10 is saying he's going to keep doing close to what he's been doing all year, which I don't see. As far as SP go, I'll count it out in just a second, but Imanaga, I will say I was very wrong on. Fly ball pitcher playing in Chicago, the Windy City, I didn't see it working out well, but I was wrong about that, and I'll eat that. I don't have any shares of him, unfortunately, but he's been really good. The fastball, as you mentioned, is just so unique. Like, it is 92, but it's from such a hard-to-pick-up release point. It's got so much ride on it. Like, it's one of the, like, highest riding fastballs in the major leagues right now. And it has pretty good horizontal on it too. So it's a tough pitch to pick up. And even though there's not a lot of extension, not a lot of velo, it plays very well. Splitter, it's pretty dominant pitch so far. I would like to see him throw the sweeper a bit more because it's a two-pitch mix. It really is. He's just a two-pitch guy for the most part. And being 90-plus percent four-seam splitter, and when the splitter's not working, then that can be a major detriment. But the four-seam fastball run value is 10 right now. It's one of the highest run values of any four-seam in baseball, which is interesting just because of how unique it is. And I don't know. I think that he probably is going to be really good, like top 20-ish, but I don't think I can go top 10. But I'm going to look and see. If you have any more comments, I'll count where I have him as far as pitchers ranked in Dynasty. I do have him top 100 overall for Dynasty, but it's not top 10 pitcher-wise.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's got that level of upside. He's been one of the most fun guys to watch, fun storyline, start the season. I know Cubs fans are loving him, as am I, but yeah, he's just not top 10. Back in my top 10 right now is like, oh, George Kirby and Jared Jones, guys like that, who I think are Pablo Lopez, Yamamoto's in that range. I still have him on that level. Let's see, where do I have him for pitchers? No, Ohtani doesn't really count right now. Right now I have him as my SP24. So yeah, that was pretty spot on. I think he's top 25. I think that's warranted, but I can't. I have him in the similar range as guys like Max Fried and Logan Webb and guys like that. So I think that's where he is. I can't go up to top 10 on him, even though I don't think this is entirely fluky, and obviously don't think he's going to keep up a sub 2 ERA either. But can he be good SP2 for your team, or even a high-end SP3 if you're like a 10 or 12 teamer? Absolutely. I think that part is legit. I just don't think he's going to be an ace. But another intriguing rookie arm there in Chicago, Ben Brown. Obviously, he had that no-hitter going last week before. I can't remember exactly when that was. But overall this year, he's made 14 appearances, 7 starts, 7 out of the pen, 51 in the third innings, 333 ERA, 109 whip, 29.6% strikeout rate, 8.7% walk rate, and has a 51% whiff rate on the knuckle curve, which is a very beautiful pitch to watch. 127 batting average against on that. One thing that's really concerning, he is getting hit hard. Yeah, he can miss bats, but he's giving up an 11.9% barrel rate, 92.6 average exit velocity, and a 53.2% hard hit rate so far. So while it's fun, I have two questions. Can he survive as a two-pitch guy, and is he a starter long-term? I'm not sure the answer to either of those is yes. So he's fun, but I'm a little more out than in, or a little more like sell than buy, I should say, here with Ben Brown.
Yeah, I think that there's always been that reliever risk with him, in my opinion, a lot due to injuries and to the command, like, can you throw enough strikes? And while it's been a respectable walk rate so far, like, he has been getting hit pretty hard, as you mentioned, which is concerning. And I'm wondering if that continues. There's a lot of bad location. So it seems like he's made like a concerted effort to keep it in the strike zone more. That doesn't mean better by any means. He's not getting a ton of chase out of the zone, and the four-seam location, it's not been great, and it's been hit pretty hard, actually, when you look at it. He's got a 93-mile-an-hour average EV against on that four-seam, which is very high, not missing bats. He is missing bats with the curve, however. That's a pretty good pitch, but I still am hesitant on this profile. I have been for a while. I know a lot of people are buying in, but I'm in the sell mode as well, even though he's been really good. I'm scared he's going to get injured again and fall apart, because that's been a theme for him, sadly. Like, I want him to stay healthy, but he's been injured quite a bit in his career. And I think if you can get out from under him and sell now, you're going to get a pretty good profit, I would bet. And you could end up doing really well in a trade.
I'm wondering, when do they give him a shot, like, closing? Because obviously the Cubs have had a lot of issues with the late innings this year. Guys are underperforming, injured, hasn't gone very well in the back end of that bullpen. Guy that's throwing mid to upper 90s, I mean, he's averaging 96.5 on the four seam with that big knuckle curve. Just go with those two pitches like he has been right now. I think Brown could be a pretty good leading reliever that could factor into some saves holds leagues. So that's what I'm holding out. The little glimmer of hope I do have for Brown, where I'm not like fully sell mode. Like, I am leaning that way, but if they were to transition him more to that role, I'd be really intrigued. I really would. So I think he could be a pretty damn good leading reliever. We'll see if they do go that route. It wouldn't surprise me given who he is and what they've dealt with in those spots. I think it's a pretty good match there for sure. All right, two more arms here before we close out the show. Neither one of which are the sexiest arms around, but hey, they've been pitching pretty well this season. We'll start with Mitchell Parker with the Washington Nationals, 24-year-old, 6'4" southpaw, overall 3.47 ERA, 1.05 whip in his 10 starts with the team. K rate's a little below league average, 21.3%, but only a 5.9% walk rate as well, and xERA is right in line with the surface ERA. But what's really impressive so far is not any of the overall numbers, but just the fact, look at his game log. He's not allowed more than 3 runs in any start. Like, first three outings, 2-0-1 earned runs. And then since then, 3-2, 3-3, 3-2, 2-3. Like, it's just twos and threes across the board here. And he's faced Atlanta. He's faced Minnesota. He's faced Texas. He's faced some pretty decent lineups. He's faced the Dodgers in his first start of the year, and he's faced Atlanta twice, actually. So, not like he's facing, he's got some, Baltimore too. I miss Baltimore. Yeah, he's got the White Sox mixed in there. He's got, that's really it. Oh, the Marlins once, but, and you have the Guardians in there too, but he's pitched pretty well and been very consistent. It's a guy that I don't have like super high hopes for him, but maybe he just settles in as like a back end rotation starter and a guy that can maybe give you some innings. But I don't know. What are your thoughts here on Mitchell Parker, Chris?
Yeah, he had another good start today against the Braves. 7 innings. It wasn't not a lot of strikeouts, but 2 earned across 7 innings. Like, you'll take that all day long. I was never the highest on Mitchell Parker, and maybe that looks pretty bad at this point. It's not a flashy profile. I don't think you should expect him to give you a huge upside, ton of strikeouts, anything of that nature, because he doesn't miss a lot of bats with his primary pitches. The four-seam, very low whiff rate at 13%. In the curve, it's his second most used pitch at near 30%. So we're looking at like 75% usage between the curve and four seam, and it's 13% whiff and 24% whiff, which 24 on the curve is not great either. Splitter has been good, however, 41% whiff rate, hasn't thrown it a ton, but 18%, and mixing the slider a little bit here and there against left-handed batters. I think at the end of the day, like, Mitchell Parker reminds me a bit of, golly, I don't know, like, looking at this profile, like, boring, but like, is he James Paxton when Paxton was decent? Not like bad, right, but like decent James Paxton, where it's like, okay, this guy's fairly interesting. I don't know. I'm not like super excited about him, but I think he's one of those glue guys that could help you if you need those glue guys in the rotation, and he might be one of them.
You know what he is? I saw this. He's a guy that I would love to target in the 50-round, like DC, draft and hold, best balls. This, I need my eighth pitcher. Boom, get Mitchell Parker. So in round 24 or whatever it ends up being. But yeah, I think that's what he is. I don't think he's ever going to be a stud or an impact arm by any means. But I think he just screams like a solid like SP4, SP5, like in the major league rotation. The guy that's just going to be pretty consistent, but not give you a lot of high upside. But hey, he's pitched very well. And again, like we said, another good start today against Atlanta. This is the second time facing them in the last 2 weeks or so. And overall against Atlanta. And yeah, their offense is missing Acuna, and it's not the Atlanta offense of last year, but still, it's a lineup that has Ozuna, Albies, Michael Harris, Austin Riley, etc. So still got some bats in that lineup, regardless of they're struggling a little bit or not. And combining those two outings, 13 in the third innings, 8 hits, 5 runs, 0 walks, and 8 strikeouts. Yeah, he's doing pretty well. And last name here, Cooper Criswell, getting a chance to start regularly with Boston this year, especially with the injury to Lucas Giolito and also Garrett Whitlock. So he's gotten a chance to, he's made 10 starts already, 43 and two-thirds innings, 392 ERA, 119 whip. XERA is actually a little bit lower at 3.52. He's an interesting pitcher. He's a righty that doesn't throw hard at all. Fastball velocity averages 89.3 on the sinker. He pitches low in the zone a lot. The only one he goes really up in the zone is the cutter a little bit. That's not even really high in the zone, but changeup down, sinker down. Obviously, you want that down. And sweeper down as well. I don't know. Like Criswell, he's been a glue guy, to use what you just said about Mitchell Parker. He's been that glue guy for this Red Sox staff and definitely stepped in and done a nice job. But I don't see a profile like this having long-term fantasy value. Right now, he could fill in and give you some depth for this year. But is he going to provide value for you next year, year after that? That I'm not sure about. There's just not a lot of upside here, not a lot of bat-missing ability. Though he does have a run of league average K rate right now. I don't know. I'm just not super high on Criswell, but I don't know. Are you, Chris?
I'm not. Like I said, I don't really see the appeal long-term, maybe in the short-term, but still. It's like, I don't know. When I look at the profile, it just bores me a bit. And who knows? Like, they could call up Richard Fitz. There's plenty of guys that could come and take a spot here, and it wouldn't shock me at all if he's not in the rotation, like, long-term due to various reasons, because I'm not sure the performance sticks, and I'm not sure that he's blocking anybody either. They could come up, but he probably continues to get run as long as he pitches like this, I'll say. And maybe he did unlock something. He did change the pitch mix. The Red Sox obviously have worked a lot with pitch dev this offseason, doing the changeup more than any pitch. He upped that usage 17 percentage points, but still, it's such a just bland profile. In my opinion, he doesn't miss bats at all. So yeah, I'm not that interested in Cooper Criswell.
Yeah, he's a good command guy, ton of extension. But I think he's just, I don't think it's been in a fluke. But at the same time, I just don't see any real long-term intrigue here with Cooper Criswell. But a boring way to run up the show. But that is going to wrap up today's episode. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in again. We hope you enjoyed it. We will see you again next Monday. But until then, everyone take care.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.